Coming up, why people are dying way too early, and it has a work connection. And U.S. employees say their company isn't agile enough. We'll break that down and what it means to you next. Welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where our goal is to help you grow personally so that you can advance professionally and lead effectively. So we're all going to die. I get it. So I'm not all of a sudden getting into aging and longevity. However, while we cannot control our day and time, I think we could be wise, and there's no sense in kind of ending it early, is there? So let's look at this. The research says that you will die quicker if you have zero meaning from your work. This is a real health issue. This is a real health issue. Are you serious? Yeah. A team of researchers from Harvard Business School and Stanford University studied the effects of stressful work on the body. And they found, overall, higher death and doctor-reported illnesses for those in stressful jobs. Now, if we use the common sense meter here, it's not really surprising, right? It's just not healthy to be stressed out all the time. So what are some of the factors that the Harvard researchers identified as stressful? Well, let's go through this list here. Some of the stuff is, I think, pretty obvious. No insurance, long hours, job insecurity, high job demands, organizational injustice. That was their list. I would add to the list, I think all those are common sense, but I would add no sense of direction or meaning. No upward mobility. It's not just job insecurity, but if I can't grow and I know that I've essentially hit my lid in an organization, I'll tell you that's stressful. How about working in a role where something's just off? How about doing something that you're good at, but you don't enjoy? Or how about doing something you just don't enjoy? I mean, excuse me, something you're just not good at. You know, some people are just, you're in a seat on the bus and you just, if you're honest with yourself or with others, you go, it's just not a good fit for me. So how do I define what a good seat is, a good fit? It's where you're using what you do best. That's talent, skill. To do work you really enjoy, that's passion, to produce results that matter to you. Now you're spending most of your day there. So this is the fit. This is a good fit. I look at it and go, all right, I spend the majority of my day using my skill. So in other words, I'm proficient, I'm efficient, and hey, people are giving me compliments, saying, hey, you're doing a really good job. This is what happens when we're spending most of our time in a job where our skills are being utilized. Then the passion. Okay, man, if I'm spending most of my day and I'm doing work that I really enjoy, think of the emotional and mental boost that's giving you. It's dopamine. It's constantly being released throughout the day because you're getting enjoyment from what you're doing. The opposite of that is the serotonin of stress, right? So if I'm getting this boost most of the day, in other words, we take the chemical out and we just go, you know, I got a boost. Versus it's draining. Boosting versus draining. And if I'm spending most of my day doing work that boosts me, my oh my, my mental and emotional health and physical health is better. Okay? So that's how we know if it's a fit. Okay? So what do you do to make sure that your work isn't killing you slowly? And I just walked you through what I believe are those three factors. I mean, that methodology is at the core of everything I teach. So that's how we go, okay, the actual job itself. That's all we were talking about there when we look at what I do best and what I enjoy doing most. And then results that matter to me. That's the job. But how do we now say, is the company, the environment, the right fit? So we could say it this way very simply. When we look at what you do best and what you love to do most and results that matter most, all right, that's just the seat on the bus. But how do we know that we are on the right bus as it relates to the stress and the unhappiness at work? So this is fun. I got to put my glasses on because I made some more notes here. There are six F words we're going to have fun with today. Now, some of you just perked up like, what? Yeah, I know. Everybody's used to the big F word, right? Well, this is a list of six F words that is a list, and it's a comprehensive list. Six factors, if you will, all beginning with the letter F. All right? Feels like this is a little bit of Sesame Street, right? The letter F is our friend today. But this is a comprehensive list that I put together that is a checklist, if you will. And you could go down the list, and if you can check it off and say, this is a positive factor for me, then you may just be having a bad day. But you know overall, hey, I can be happy here. So how can we be happy at work? All right, that's the question. It's these F words. All right, that's how you know. Here we go. Number one, is it a good fit? I just walked through that, kind of got ahead of myself. I got ahead of Nathan a little bit, got ahead of myself. Fit, I just walked through fit a moment ago. I'll walk through it again very briefly. That's where I'm spending the majority of my day, using what I do best. That's the talent and skill to do work that I really enjoy. We call that passion. And it's producing results that are aligned with me and my values. In other words, they mean a lot. So that's fit. In other words, am I in the right seat? We've already covered that one. That's the first F word, fit. The second F word, friends. There's so much research right now about the importance of having friends at work. Do they have to be your friends outside of work? No. It doesn't mean that your bestie at work has got to be your bestie in life. However, the data shows that there's an enormous amount of loneliness in the world of work, and it's because people aren't really developing friendships in the workplace. It's the contrast from feeling a sense of community when you're at work. Think about how many hours you're spending at work, folks. And if you don't have friends at work, that is soul-sucking. And you can be in an office surrounded by a team of 10, 50, 100, and be completely lonely. The research shows, this is not my opinion, this is not Ken Coleman spouting off. The research shows that people who develop friendships in the office are healthier, mentally, emotionally, physically. Next F word, finances. So we started with, you got to have a good fit, you got to have good friends, and the financial situation has got to be good. In other words, are you making the money that you could be making? Are we meeting our potential financially? That is two things we're looking at here. Is your company paying you what the market bears? And so you feel like you're being fairly compensated based on facts, on feelings. And then are you meeting your goals and thus feeling really good because, hey, I'm making good money. I'm making more money. I've got the opportunity to make even more money because here's what's going on here. Margin financially equals freedom. Now, I should point out here, I think across the board, Americans are paid fairly. But the stressor and the argument we see on social media everywhere is life is too expensive. So for everybody who goes on TikTok and gripes about how they're not making enough money, I bet you I could go in their budget and find somewhere between $500 to $1,000 a month. Probably more, but at a baseline that I could find. So reducing your expenses, living below your means is another way of getting margin. Oh, by the way, you know, go, oh, I've got enough. I'm making enough. I'm making plenty. I'm just making the most of it. Next F word, feedback. Listen, we humans need to know where we stand. We need to know where we stand. Getting healthy feedback to say, this is where you're doing great. This is where you can grow. We're going to invest in you. This is vital to be in an environment where there's clear communication. In other words, feedback. This is so vitally important to being happy at work, is to know where you stand with your leader, with others, feedback. Next F word, future. The key to being happy at work is to know that you have a future there, that you have an opportunity, a ladder that you can grow, an opportunity to make more money, an opportunity to experience more meaning. This is energizing. To know that you have a future is energizing. To know you do not have a future is absolutely soul-sucking. You know it, and I know it too. And then final F word, freedom. Freedom. This is autonomy to do the job. You've been trained well. You've been given the resources to do it. Now, please, boss, let me do it. You've told me how you want it done, when you want it done, why you want it done that way and delivered the way. Let me do it. People crave autonomy. They don't want some micromanager hovering over them. So these F words are the key to being happy at work and living longer, because the research shows you're more sick, you die earlier when you are in a highly stressful and highly unhappy workplace. Quick review, you got to have a good fit. You got to have good friends. You got to have good finances. You got to get good feedback. You have a good opportunity for a future, and you got to have freedom. Those are the six F words that will guarantee you happiness at work and do more for your health than anything else than you can do. And that includes exercise and nutrition, because you spend so much of your time and effort in the workplace. So there you go. Is it possible to be happy at work? Yes, it is. How do I measure it? I just gave you the six F words. Helping you grow personally so you can advance professionally and then lead effectively. This is the Ken Coleman Show. I'm Ken. So excited to have you with us. I'm honored to have you with us. Real quick ask for you. If you're enjoying the show, it's helping you. Would you share? If you're watching on YouTube, you can give us a thumbs up on the video. Subscribe to the channel and share. If you're listening via podcast, you can give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. And then subscribe and share as well. Also, for those of you who are new to the show, or you've been with the show a while, you've taken the Get Clear assessment, or you're thinking about taking the Get Clear assessment, we're adding something to it that I think is very, very exciting. We launched this tool 3 years ago, and we've helped hundreds of thousands of people with a simple 20-minute assessment that allows you to see what you do best, what you enjoy doing most, and what results motivate you. This is not a personality profile. In fact, I can't stand all these personality profiles that get turned into job indicators. No assessment can tell you what job you're supposed to do. That's just bananas. You just can't. But you can get awareness and clarity on who you are, what you want to do, why you want to do it, where you can do it, and how to get there. And we can now promise that, because I wrote a short book. This is the shortest, smallest book I've ever written. Really fun project. It's called Find the Work You're Wired to Do. And this book picks up at your assessment results. So in other words, when you start this book, it's like me coaching you, grabbing you by the hand, going, let's walk down the path of professional growth. And I'm your guide, and we're going to take your results. And for those of you who go, okay, the results hit me, but now what? Well, this book is going to walk you through by going, okay, here's how we ideate on where we want to go, and then how we get there. So it's coming out, what, in May? I have my talking points here somewhere. I don't know. Go to KenColeman.com. Yes, KenColeman.com, and pre-order it now. And if you do, we're going to give you the audiobook with my, I'm reading it right now. This week I started, I'm trying to keep that baritone. I'm trying to drop it down here, make it more enjoyable to listen to. I'm kidding. Christian is just looking at me with this blank stare. He has no idea what I'm talking about. You can pre-order the book at KenColeman.com, and if you pre-order it, you get extra goodies, which is the audiobook and the ebook. And by the way, both of those come with assessments. So you end up getting two extra assessments or an assessment, yes, with the pre-order. So it comes out in May. I want to say May 7th. This is a fun little project, not a massive book. It's not designed to be. It's meant to be, Ken, give me the Snickers bar, baby. And that's what it does. So There you go. All right. In my hands, a very interesting article. And the reason I'm going to share this article with you all is because I like to tell you what's going on in the world of work from a trend standpoint. This particular article is going to cover two things that are important. Number one, the very subject and what's one of the greatest soft skills that we can be developing right now. According to LinkedIn, two out of the last 3 years, LinkedIn has done a study and they have said that the number one skill in the workplace that leaders are looking for. Now, this is important. The number one skill that you can develop right now in the world of work. And gosh, parents, please wake up and listen to me because your kid needs this. The skill is adaptability. Adaptability. Now, you know, hey, you could have 80 different definitions. I'll tell you what I think adaptability is. The ability to handle change. That's how I would define adaptability. If I'm adaptable, it means I can handle change. Does change suck? Sometimes. For some of you out there, the very idea of change makes you break out in a rash. I get it. I get that. By the way, no judgment there. That's how you're wired. You've got some stuff in your past that has shaped that. And again, I get it. I will tell you that I'm a person who's wired for change. So you got two types of people when it comes to change. Either you kind of naturally go, oh, that's kind of fun. Let's go. Woo! And that's kind of me. And then you go, oh, change. Oh, no. Right. And there are all different types of change. But adaptability, watch, adaptability is I handle it. Do I have to like it? No. Do I have to deal with it? Yes. And we can say all we want to, I'm not dealing with it, right? So you get somebody that's immature, maybe storms off the work site or leaves, you know, and throws a hissy fit. And we see this all the time in the news. I'm not dealing with change. I'm walking away. Well, guess what? You just dealt with change. You just dealt with change. You said you're not dealing with it and you're walking away. I got news for you. When you walked away, you dealt with it. So there's no cute dance by which we dance around change. All right. Now, there's the setup. So this article is talking about agility, and this comes from Gallup study, found that 18%, this is crazy, 18% of America workers said that their company is agile. Good Lord, leaders, get your head out of your rear end. Less than 20% of employees are saying that our company is agile. What that means is, let me break that down for you. It just means that they're going, yeah, our leaders don't deal with change well. We don't move quickly. We don't react quickly. It's like the Titanic versus a jet ski. A jet ski is agile. A giant cruise ship is not. So, what's happening? We're in a day and age where technology is allowing all of us on a personal level, forget work for a moment, just on a personal level, we're just agile. I mean, we can make changes all the time. We're moving faster, making faster decisions. It's all technology. It's just boop, 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 boop. That's our life right now. Then you get in the workplace and it's like, you know, it's like, what is happening here? The customer needs a result. So there's three reasons that this article lays out, and it's really good. So what we've got is we've got ambition or purpose colliding with the matrix. What's the matrix? Over 8 out of 10 U.S. employees are in what we call matrix roles. In other words, what that means is they support multiple. So I'm a Ramsey personality. I am a author, speaker, broadcaster, blah, 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 blah. And at Ramsey, there's 6 of us. There are multiple team members that support all of us. So you've got marketers, you've got writers, you've got designers, you've got programmers, and I could go on and on. Publicists, I could go on and on. Those positions are what are defined as matrix positions. Now, this is key. So what that means is that as a Ramsey personality, my number one priority may not be the writer that I work with's number one priority. because she is supporting multiple people in a matrix role. And that's the way the world of work is laid out. So that creates a lack of agility. Okay. So this is where leadership comes in, and you look at this data and you go, leaders, this is pathetic. You have less than 20% of employees saying that you are agile, dear leader. So the matrix is a natural tension in priority. So a leader's job, he's got to come in and go, okay, I, the leader, have got to communicate clear priorities, and clear priorities create healthy expectations. Second, process has made decision-making too far away from the customer. I got a friend by the name of Todd Duncan. He's a best-selling author. And he tells a story of going to a diner one time with his wife, and he ordered a cheeseburger. And then he said at the very end, he said, well, could you fry an egg and put it on my cheeseburger? And the girl looked at him and said, no, we can't do that. And he was more curious than he was irritated. And so he pushed back and he was like, she goes, oh no. She said, no, we can't do that. That's not an option on the menu. And he said, well, do you have eggs? And she said, well, I think we might have eggs. I'll have to check. And so now he's just kind of intrigued by this. So she came back out and said, we can't do that. And he pressed her some more and she said, well, we don't even have eggs. And he's like, well, I'd like an egg, but you know, she wasn't willing to go, well, what does the customer want here? There's a grocery store across the street. We could go get an egg if we really wanted to do it. Now that's the nth degree. Does she have to do that? No. But the bottom line is before she even checked if she had eggs, her response was, that's not on the menu and I'm not even going to consider that. And it's just one egg. By the way, my friend and I both doubt the fact that they didn't have any eggs. I believe they had eggs in there with all the stuff they're cooking. So what's the point? The point is that decision has been made somewhere else, way away from the customer. The customer's at the counter asking for an egg on the burger. And so real power is the power to fail and make mistakes. There should be a situation where that young lady can go, yeah, I'll get you an egg. We'll make it happen. And if it's a mistake, then we talk about it later, but she's empowered to make a good decision. And then finally, there is a fear of perfection. Try to get perfect. Perfect's not even possible, but it leads to endless cycles of constant improvements, repeated checks, and this just slows everything. So here's why. I wrote it down on my notes right here. Here's the reason why companies aren't agile enough. They are not focusing on principles over process. Everything's process. Love the process. I think process matters. You got to win with processes. But when processes outweigh principle, and then how we're going to act with the customer, with our team, we're going to make common sense, integrity-filled decisions, then processes should always give way to principles. If it doesn't fit the process, but it's the right principle, do it. Figure it out later. So there you go. We need more agile leaders, and then we'd have more agile workers, and then we'd have more agile companies. I don't want to help you win at work. And I'm going to tell you what will happen. You'll start winning in other areas of your life if you're winning at work. We do that through some coaching sessions here. Let's go to Leo, who joins us in Newark, New Jersey. Leo, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Great to talk to you, man.
Good to talk to you.
Awesome. Was hoping to see, looks like based on what you just talked about, your six F's here made it pretty clear I am meant to be in sales. And so I think based on how great I am at establishing relationships, communicating clearly and effectively and selling great products while establishing exceptional customer service based on my hospitality background, what industry do you think is best because sales is so broad that you think would be a great fit. I'm in pharma sales now. I don't like that I have a cap on what I can make. I love the performance-based earning structure, and there's not a lot of clarity on how I'm performing, and thus I'm not really seeing how I'm doing, which is really frustrating.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Well, on the surface, my gut tells me this is less about industry and it's more about company. True?
Possibly. I hear that in pharma, there's caps everywhere on bonuses.
Is that right? Okay.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you answered part of the question. It is a little bit industry specific. So if I was in your shoes, and I'm going to answer it that way. If I was in your shoes, and I knew that sales was my superpower, I'm good at it, I enjoy sales, I'm going to look at that third piece of my methodology. So I know what I do best, well, let's call it sales. I know what I love to do most, let's call it connecting with people, selling a solution.
Yeah.
But what motivates me? What results motivate me? And I think that right there determines the type of sales job, okay? Let me give you an example, and then I'm going to bring it back to you, and I want you to tell me what you think. There are six missional results in the Get Clear Career Assessment, okay? And just an example, my number one missional result is achievement, okay? Influence is second on the list for me, but number one is achievement, which means because I'm an Enneagram 3, because of my environment growing up, the experiences I've had, I'm highly competitive, and what really drives me is the ability to keep getting better, to keep performing. In other words, yeah. I need a scoreboard. So achievement is the game for me. So if I'm you, Leo, and I'm not, and you're not me, but if I was in your situation, the first thing I'm looking at in a sales role and in an industry, so industry first and company second. So the pharmaceutical thing, based on what you told me, would knock them out for me because I don't like to be capped. So I would, right, just like you, immediately go, nope, that's not for me. That's going to irritate me. I'm never going to get over it. And I'm just delaying the inevitable that I'm going to exit. So why enter? That's where you are today on farm, correct, on pharma, and I'm with you. So because achievement's number one for me, I'm going to be going, all right, industry, what industry has a lot of salespeople making seven figures? That's where I'd start. That doesn't mean I'm going to choose those, but I kind of go, and all I'm looking for here now is I'm gathering facts. And I'm going, all right, what's my greatest opportunity for income industry-wise? And then I'm going to look at those companies, and then I'm going to go to values. So first I'm going to go to what motivates me is not having a lid, the ability to make as much as I possibly can or perform to my best and not be capped. And then number two, what product or service could I get real value from selling? So I'm going to stop there. Does that resonate with you?
100%. Absolutely.
All right. So what do we know? What do you think is your driving motivator? Is it selling to serve, selling to influence, selling for efficiency, selling for achievement? I mean, what do you think it is?
Honestly, I think I'm right there with you. I love seeing the numbers, scoreboard. I love knowing that what I'm doing is, I know if I'm doing well or not, if I'm doing well based on what I'm selling and how much I'm selling.
Right.
Like, you know, like working in the restaurant, I know, okay, I'm selling a good product. I'm selling a Wagyu steak, and I know that this steak is delicious, and I'm putting a smile on someone's face because they, yes, agree that
you,
I'm,
put a smile on my face. Just now, I was thinking about how good the Wagyu is, man. I'm picturing nice strip of Wagyu in front of me right now. Okay, so
you gotta have a Wagyu rib cap is what you gotta have.
All right, so where's your head right now? Where's your head?
I don't know what industry though. You know, there's,
all right,
like, there's,
so,
tech, there's this, there's that.
So we got some research to do. Yeah?
Right.
Do you agree with me, right, that the first thing I'm going to do is look at the best opportunity, the best industries for salespeople?
Right.
Highest commissions, highest sales. In fact, let me just do this for a second. Let's just for fun.
Yeah, and then there's that other side, right? Like my wife has a couple medical conditions, and so obviously health insurance is important. And also culturally, right? I'm a Christian, and so I want to be sure. I love being sure. It seems like for the majority part of it, a lot of salespeople are just like me. They're hungry. But I see a lot of sleazy salesmen, right? People who are not honest, who don't have integrity, who, you know, I don't want to be surrounded by them also. You know,
okay.
I would love to be on a team that's...
All right, now that's company-wide. So we...
Is that just company? Okay.
Yeah, because, well, it's not just company. So you would look at industry and you go, okay, of all these industries that have the best opportunity for earning, so I'm going to walk you through this. I just typed it up on the old Google here. And this is just a quick snapshot. Top industry for sales. Realtor, software sales, digital products, cybersecurity sales, pharma's in there. Those are the ones that jump. Financial services, wholesale manufacturing. I'm telling you something right now. I got a friend. I met him coaching my daughter and his daughter in soccer. Dude's killing it. He's been making seven figures for at least 10 years. Who knows how long. And I asked him one day, what do you sell? I knew he was killing it. You know what he sells?
What?
He sells those big, giant, I'm going to call them cylinders or pipes that they use for construction. You know, you're driving down the road and you see these massive concrete that kind of create, I guess it's sewage or water flow. I'm so over my skis right now. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, 100%.
Guy makes tons of money.
That's awesome.
Okay, so we're going to start with, here's your checklist. We start with... What industries have the highest pay for salespeople? You can research that. I just did it. But I think you could go deeper into this. So really research that. Now we look at, well, what's that environment like? Are these guys on the road 25 out of 30 days a month? You're going, my wife's got health issues. I can't do that. Or maybe you can. But you basically, this is all research at this point. So we're looking at industry for money-making potential, and lifestyle. Is that anything else on the list? I think that's pretty good, yeah?
I think that's pretty awesome.
All right,
I wonder
now,
if location plays into that.
Sure.
I would love to relocate to Dallas.
Sure.
Just because of the culture fit and, you know, no state income tax, and I'm obviously able to build my wealth a lot faster because real estate's half off. You know?
Right. So where that comes in is we're doing industry first, and we're looking at income potential and lifestyle.
Okay.
All right, then we select industry. So let's say we come up with five industries.
Mm-hmm.
Or three, who cares? And now you start looking at companies within the industry. So now you're looking at, okay, reputation, are the values aligned? Are they woke? Is it an environment that's not kind to Christians? You just start looking at all this stuff.
Right.
And then you go, who's in Texas? So you got it?
Got it.
This is actually pretty simple. Here's what it comes down to. You need to sell something, I believe, that there's some value connection. It doesn't matter as much to you, but you just got to at least believe in the product or the service.
Right, exactly. I cannot imagine selling something.
There
that
you go. So that's huge, right?
Yeah.
And you want to sell it. So here's your statement. What job is going to allow me to sell a product or service that I believe in an environment that I can thrive in? That's it. And not be limited financially.
Right.
Just add that little element. And that's what you're looking for. And I think it's findable. But it's like the idea of I got to know what I'm looking for before I find it. That's the deal. Thank you, Leo, for the call. You're going to do it, man. This is The Ken Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.